This is Emerson versus Cook.
Cook versus Emerson.
Oh, come on. I thought we decided.
Okay, fine. I'm Natalie Cook.
And I'm Saya Emerson. And thanks for listening to our podcast about films.
Well, let's be honest. It's going to be mostly us laughing and a little bit about films.
We're going to try and keep it together for you, though.
Thanks for listening.
Hey, y'all.
Hey, y'all.
Welcome to our third podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We're all primed and ready to go for you, laughing.
So this podcast, we thought you just didn't know enough about us via our filmic discussions, so we thought we'd pull back the toenail and just dig around in the nail bed like athlete's foot tends to do.
Oh my god, that's a shockingly horrible metaphor. Maybe bite through the crispy chocolate shell and into the creamy filling.
That's not us, though.
No,
we're infected toenail.
Our personalities are like a fungus? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I guess we'll find out via
questions
that we're going to ask each other and just to get a better feel of. Of who we are and what we like in movies and our personalities.
Yeah, so we came up with these questions completely separately. And
we don't know what either one's going to ask.
And we're just going to see where these lead us. And, they might have something to do with movies. They might just be deep, revealing,
fungal
psychological windows to our fungal nail beds. Would you like to go first?
I can go first. Sure, okay. I can go first. Saya.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to start pretty broad here, just to kind of, not completely pushing the deep end. So we have mentioned, I believe, the films of David Lynch and that you are a fan.
I am.
Could you possibly name your top three David Lynch movies and why?
Sure. Easy.
Okay.
Softball in it.
I thought we'd start a little light, buddy. Come on.
All right. Let's see. I would say in no order.
Okay.
My top three are Mulholland Drive, Blue Velvet, and Wild at Heart.
Okay.
Mulholland Drive I've seen almost more than any other movie besides Newsies the musical. It's a great combo if you ever want to do a double feature.
Oh boy. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Painting
the Saya palette here.
Yeah. I first saw Mulholland Drive when my dad saw it in the theater and then decided that he needed to take my mom and I to see it again. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, my dad loves movies and he and I have shared many a filmic discussion over the years. but I did not know that it was going to be a really weird movie to watch with your parents.
That's actually another question I was going to ask you is, sort of like the movie, maybe one of the first movies you've ever watched with explicit nudity with your parents for that awkward moment.
Oh, God.
Mulholland Drive doesn't really have explicit nudity, but it does have explicit lesbian love scene.
Yes, it does. And when that scene was happening, I was like, yeah, you know what? This is awkward because this is kind of a hot scene. And I think everyone's feeling that way in the theater. And hopefully I don't want to ever think about that with my parents. Anyway, love that movie. It almost always makes me cry. It's very emotional for me to watch. And I like talking to people about that movie because people have really different responses to it. Some people feel really manipulated by David Lynch, and Mulholland Drive is like a great example of, a movie that people feel manipulated by. But I feel like it's kind of a... just kind of this incredible emotional tapestry that he creates. It just has this perfect balance of kind of like Seven Deadly Sins, like deep pathos of, hate and desire and lust and
yes,
Naomi Watts, defined,
but just in a very human sort of mixed bag sort of way, and it's very hard to in that movie particularly, it's hard to show to audiences those sort of complex emotions that are in everybody, and that they just intertwine with each other so often. Yeah. And I think that that movie, like you said, really wove a wonderful tapestry of all of those things together. Naomi Watts is just stellar. My God.
That scene where she auditions for the movie and she has to kiss that older man is so amazing. I could not believe that acting when I saw that. It was just brilliant. That was the first movie I ever saw her in, too. And then, you know, Wild at Heart is just a shit show, and I love it. And, you know, you don't have to talk about Nicolas Cage anymore. And, you know, any movie where someone smears lipstick all over their face.
While screaming in a mirror.
And then I think Blue Velvet is just, like, a wonderful film noir that explores the decaying underbelly of Americana, the myth of American happiness, and we could go into you know, David Lynch, great.
To which I laugh at the myth of American happiness.
Well, it is decaying in a paper bag, like an ear, like a severed ear.
Yeah, well done.
All right, shall I ask you a question?
Please.
Well, let's go off of this. What scene in a movie, or type of scene, or just that comes to mind, has moved you the most? And that could be either sad, moving, just profoundly emotionally affecting for you.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to tap into my cold robot heart.
Would you like to come back to this question?
Maybe. Fuck.
Hey, I mean, I have an answer, but, you know. I have a long list. There's a lot of scenes that, I mean, the reason I asked this question was because I definitely have an answer for it, which is that, okay, Meet Me in St. Louis, when Judy Garland sings Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas after her little sister has smashed all the snowmen because they have to move out of St. Louis. And it's just, like, the most beautiful scene, and she looks so beautiful, and it's, like, that magical, sparkling light that's hitting her crushed velvet dress, and she sings that song, and every time, that gets me every time. I can't watch The Hours, basically, unless I'm, like, in the mood to just sob for a full hour. Or
Who
hours.
Who is it? Who is it?
Actually, a lot of musicals, I really can just fall down that hole of, like, West Side Story. End of West Side Story. It's so good.
Yeah.
And I think it's just movies that really convince me that those emotions were felt by someone in the process of making that movie, you know, that there was some authenticity there.
I would say that one movie that I watched that really moved me was Never Let Me Go.
Right.
And
which I haven't seen yet.
Incredible movie. And I think that there's a lot of differences definitely between the text and the film, where Ishiguro does a great thing of just sort of people being resigned to their fate, these English people. Yeah. And something about the movie, it fleshed out this theme. I don't know. Should I spoiler alert this?
No, I know exactly what it is.
Flesh out They're this clones. Theme of spoiler human alert. Harvesting. And in the film, in the film, it's really done so well that you think that these kids have some kind of chance, like they really build up that hope that they could maybe get out of this sort of cyclical thing of just being a clone. And, and it's beautiful to look at and just, again, just sort of resigned to their fate, and it's just... That movie just struck me in the theater. And then even as I was leaving and I was thinking about it again, cried again on the way to the car.
Yeah.
And I've had another experience like that with the movie Whale Rider. If you remember this movie.
Oh, yeah. I saw Whale Rider.
Where she's trying.
It's not bad. It's not bad. Let's be honest.
Where she's trying to, like, prove herself to her grandfather, and she's singing and crying because he isn't fucking there.
What's that one famous movie that all men are supposed to cry at? Rudy?
Rudy?
Wait.
With Sean Astin?
Yeah. Isn't that the one?
I have,
like,
no idea.
A stereotype. Well, that and fucking Shawshank.
Shawshank Redemption.
God, I hate it.
Probably the most popular movie in the United States, I would say.
No, you know what that movie is? That is the movie that people who are half educated about movies say is their favorite movie. I'm just going to make that fucking pompous statement. That's like, people see that movie and they're like, I felt something. I'm going home. Yeah. And I've reached my comfort level boundary for feeling things
right.
from art.
Yeah. But I would definitely say that Todd Solondz's films have moved me before.
Yeah.
And not like in that sort of like great gut-wrenching crying that, you know, just is so cleansing, but just in that sort of like, oh, fuck. He really just sort of extrapolates these horrible people.
Yeah.
But in a way that helps examine it, and you're just like.
Oh. I would say the same thing about Alexander Payne with like, you know, about Schmidt and Sideways and
yeah.
The Descendants. Have you seen The Descendants
yet? I did see The Descendants. Yes, that's like that's another one where it was very complex and not taken and during down that same sort of well-beaten path of a sort of betrayal. And then also dealing
like,
with the death of the mother as well. All of that combined.
Yeah. I think the reason we like those movies is because we both are attracted to really honest portrayals of human beings that aren't like archetypes. We both want to move beyond what we've seen before. And also, we're not afraid of mediocrity. And I think that those directors aren't either. When they make a character, they want it to be an honest character. And a lot of the times, people are just kind of average.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, when I saw The Descendants, I was like, this is a great portrayal of teenagers. Because none of these teenagers have any spectacular skills.
No.
They're kind of just trying to get through the shitty time.
Right.
And, you know, they're talking. They're being horrible to each other. They're being horrible to their family. And it's so much like what I've seen in my own life, just like with my relatives, like just being shitty to each other.
And I think
it's hard to capture that in a movie.
Well, and I think that people don't tend to respond to that well because
yeah.
like I have that in my own life.
Right.
I go to the movies to forget.
Yeah.
But it's just something to capture that where you sense a lot in other movies that they try to do this, but it's so contrived
mm-hmm.
that it's ridiculous. And you can't.
Well, when
get
you
into
add
it.
Quirkiness to
yeah.
that. Then you get this kind of, like, twee, you know, Miranda. Well, you know, I kind of like Miranda July. I have to say, you and me and everyone we know totally got to me.
Okay.
It got me.
Did it move
I've
you?
Only seen it once.
Yeah.
It didn't. I don't think it moved me because there was so much affectation there
mm-hmm.
for me to, like, slog through. But, yeah, Alexander Payne's movies definitely, for me, are, like, oh, this is awful to watch because it's just this window onto someone who you would normally not see.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Just
do we really want to see this?
In the toenail bed.
Yeah.
They're in the toenail bed.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
So, Saya.
Yeah.
Tell me a couple of your favorite love affairs or stories that you've seen.
I really like Dr. Zhivago
mm-hmm.
because it's so unconventional with the fact that he has these two women who he loves almost equally, but they are so different. I love that movie. Omar Sharif. He's so good. He's too good. He's painfully noble, you know? He's painfully noble for someone who's cheating on his wife with the hottest woman in Russia. And, but, you know, his wife, played by Geraldine Chaplin, daughter
mm-hmm.
of Charlie,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She's a great actress. She's been in a couple of movies that I really love. She was the dance instructor in Talk to Her.
Oh.
And she's had a really interesting career. But the fact that she is this wonderful wife who is taking care of his child and just holding everything together and, you know, helping him organize stuff. And then he has this, like, incredible lust for Lara. Who is, you know, blonde, bombshell, big old boobs and looking hot in her little cottage. And he goes and visits her in her little cottage and they just get it on. And then he goes back to his wife who's kind of, you know, just like sadly so much less attractive than.
This reminds me.
Oh, it's so sad.
This reminds
good.
Me a little bit of, what was that movie? About Stravinsky and Chanel.
Oh, I never saw that.
And. Really, really good. Same sort of situation. Loving wife. And Chanel is that sort of exotic modern woman, mm-hmm. and that just really just stokes his flames, and, yeah. and the sort of creativity flows out, but in the end it just cannot be.
Yeah. Let me try and think of some other... That's not, you know, my usual genre.
I know, that's why I thought it would be interesting.
Yeah. This is embarrassing, but The English Patient kind of gets me. The English Patient works, and especially with the sub-story of Naveen Andrews and Juliette Binoche.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Buddy.
Hoist me up in a cathedral, you know? Come on. That scene.
Take the turban off, let the hair down.
And he diffuses bombs for a living?
Yeah.
Hot. Well, Naveen Andrews, he's come on. Glossy locks. Because, you know, Kristen Scott Thomas doesn't do it for me.
Yeah.
She's ice queen.
Brittle. Yeah. yeah. Real brittle.
But Ralph Fiennes is a real hottie in that movie, too. Yeah. I think I love to have those, like, historical scopes when I watch a romance. Because just watching, like, two people in New York City, like, falling in love. Like, right. there's nothing more boring to me than that. Because right. it's so pedestrian. But, like, if it's set against a background that is educational.
How about Out of Africa?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That final scene where she's standing over his grave. That clump of dirt, and she doesn't throw it. She holds on to it.
Oh yeah.
She holds on to it, and then I think she might put it in her hair while she's walking away.
Yeah.
Based on true, real people, yeah. which I like that as well, and that's definitely an unconventional love story.
Mm-hmm. It's always interesting when a movie is based on people who are both living like incredibly intellectually fulfilling lives,
mm-hmm.
and they
yes.
have kind of like a destiny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like. If the woman is like a philanthropist or a humanitarian, and then the man is like an explorer or something, and then like they meet in like a distant land, like what we've been talking about, you know? Like there's something about that where it's like they both have this like incredible momentum to their lives already.
Yeah.
And then they collide and it's like sparks fly, and it's just like, they, you know, they both have a romance about kind of the historical placement of their lives. And it's almost like it's like outside the movie a little bit of like, these two forces.
But they still come down to this sort of like relationship, these sort of like brass tacks of like relationship foundations
mm-hmm.
that everyone tends to find eventually. Like, yeah. we're going to go out in the jungle. You're going to wash my hair. We're going to kill a lion together.
Hot.
Yeah.
Kind
of. I won't see you for a couple of months because you're flying your plane, making maps of Africa. Is that what Dennis Finch did? I don't remember anymore. And then she's going to be there with her farm and the Kikuyu people and, like, just living her own life, but eventually you want more.
Oh, I just remembered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you seen the movie Body Heat?
Is this... Please don't tell me this is Madonna and Willem Dafoe.
Oh, no.
Okay.
This is Kathleen Turner and William Hurt.
Oh!
Who, I would say, if you were to ask me, like, who's, like, your number one, like, lust object, young William Hurt. I don't know
really?
Why! I don't know why! Maybe him and Naveen Andrews. Weird combo! I know, he's very Aryan.
Yeah!
But you haven't seen Body Heat.
I haven't seen
Body
Heat.
You know what he does?
Heat.
Let me describe a scene in Body Heat for you. So, Kathleen Turner is, like, this very, like, prim, you know, waspy lady.
How
she's
could she
super sexy,
that
though.
Sultry
she's
voice.
So sexy. And William Hurt is just like a drifter. And they meet in this like seaside town, and they just have really an instant sexual, like they have to just fuck. And it's amazing, the chemistry that you have to watch this movie. So they like flirt a couple times across the bar, and it's just incredible sexual tension that they create. And then he shows up at her lake house, and she's married.
Oh, boy.
He shows up there, and she's inside the house, and he's out on her porch. And she sees him through the glass. And instead of knocking on the door and being like, excuse me, may I come in and defile you or whatever, he picks up a chair from the deck and smashes the window and then goes in through the window and just, yeah. It is so good. You have to watch it. Because they just have the best, like, eye contact, just this most sizzling eye contact you've ever seen in any movie. It's incredible. I also have to mention the piano again. Harvey Keitel and Holly Hunter.
Holly Hunter.
They have amazing chemistry in that movie because it's kind of dirty.
Well, it's very... She doesn't say a word.
Yeah.
But it's just really
well. And he blackmails her. He blackmails her. He
says, for the piano.
For the piano keys? Oh, my God. What, and then she's so into it.
Yeah.
Love it. I do like it when things are a little fucked up in that way.
To come a little bit full circle, that was the first movie that we watched with our parents that had an explicit
That was
nudity.
Your yeah. first one?
Yes. And that was that is still a joke.
Harvey Keitel, full frontal.
Harvey Keitel, full frontal. That's quite a lot to take in one spoonful, buddy.
With facial tattoos.
And I have to say this. Sorry, Dad. But the setup was we were watching the piano, and you know, he has the piano. He rescued it from the bottom of the ocean, yeah. And he's polishing it, and he takes off his own shirt, yeah. And he does this, and it's this very, the scene, I don't know if yeah. you remember it, very well lit, and my dad actually goes like, oh, wow, Harv really kept in shape.
Way to go, Harv. He's pretty weird looking.
Just a really benign comment from my dad. Like, he's kind, maybe he's my age. Hey, kept in shape. And then just seconds later, she's in there. He pulls back the curtain. Ba-bam! Penis. And he's just like, you know, I'm wondering what it would take for us to lay down naked together. She's like, what?
Do you remember the part where he touches the hole through her stocking?
Yes!
Oh my god!
Because he's underneath the piano.
It's so dirty. Because, like, it's so Victorian and so, she's so prim and proper and she's just, like, frozen.
Right.
He's, like,
well, she's even more, what's the word I'm looking for? Reserved, I think, yeah. Because she cannot talk.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Do you have another question to ask me? Because all mine are really stupid.
Oh, okay. I will ask you another question. What are your favorite man-eating animal movies, and why?
Ghost in the Darkness.
Yeah, yeah, we already know that from the last one. That was your...
Dad, can I have the last lion movie again? I like watching those men get eaten by the lions, especially those in the medical tent covered
in
blood.
Have you seen that awful, awful French movie called Brotherhood of the Wolf?
No!
Have you? We have to watch it. It's truly terrible.
Doesn't this involve like sword fighting and like big capes, if I remember correctly?
Full on weird martial arts,
oh,
buddy.
Oh boy.
And I loved that movie when it came out. That's been one of those movies where I saw it when it came out, thought it was brilliant. This was, I don't know when it came out, like 1999 or something. Mm-hmm. I was like 15.
Yeah.
And
this movie is brilliant!
Yeah, and saw it in the theater with my friends, and then saw it like 5 years later, and it just completely did not age well. And it has Vincent Cassel in it.
Ooh, I like him.
He's so good.
I really like him.
He plays
him.
The bad guy in this movie, and it
he
also has Monica Bellucci
well.
In it.
Ooh.
It's got a great cast. We just have to watch it. It's just, I can't describe it. It's really stupid and complicated. I kind of like Lake Placid.
Wow! Wow.
I just like the balls that it takes to have a creature that large that just could not exist. Because imagine, it would have to eat like a whole cow, like every day.
So
that alligator's like 50 feet long.
So you don't... You...
And then it just jumps. I think it gets a helicopter.
This is an
end.
Interesting turn.
Oh, okay. Deep Blue Sea. Deep Blue Sea is so good.
Interesting turn in that where with human relationships you like reality, but in a case of human and animal, just bonkers, crazy bullshit.
Yeah, I like
genetically altered animals.
I like really over the top special effects like that. I saw Piranha 3D.
I saw that
in the
I
theater.
Saw that. Yeah, yeah, yep.
That was mostly about.
Boobs.
Chicks in bikinis,
boobs.
Though. Yeah. That's mostly the plot of that movie.
And a penis. that was eaten by a piranha. Oh. Forgot about that. Deeply Sea. Samuel Jackson's the first one to go in that one.
Greatest death scene ever. Given an inspirational speech, gets eaten by a shark.
Also eaten by a raptor. Samuel L. Jackson. He was eaten by a raptor in Jurassic Park. Yes.
Jurassic Park.
No, in the first one, you don't see it happen.
He's not in Jurassic Park 1, is he?
Yes, he is. He's one of the, like, operators of the park. He smokes a lot of cigarettes.
Okay, yeah.
Man, that makes you want to think, like, how many things has Samuel Jackson been eaten by? That's it, Prince. That's all. A shark and a raptor.
It's real cool.
It's real cool.
But look who we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool guy. What are some of your favorite characters in movies?
Favorite characters in movies?
Or how about this? Let's narrow it down.
Yeah.
Characters you'd want to hang out with for like a couple hours if you could.
Oh, okay. Definitely Terry Doolittle from Jumping Jack Flash, right off the bat.
Never seen it. Who is that?
It's Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, okay.
And she basically plays like a computer technician in a bank, and she does international transactions, but she also does like IMing, well, for that time,
yeah,
to like French people, like, how was the pot roast recipe? How did your date go? And she's always in trouble with her boss, but then she gets mixed up in like spy intrigue as well.
Okay.
And I think she's awesome. She's hilarious in that. Everything she approaches is this like, what the fuck sort of situation. And I love that. I really like that movie so much. Other people I would love to hang out with. How about Hedwig?
Oh, yeah. The stories.
The stories? The makeup application, the costumes.
The bra tips.
Bra tips, endless singing.
Oh, good call. Because imagine you just traipse around, drinking vodka straight from the bottle.
Maybe serenading people in a 7-Eleven parking lot.
Hang out in a boneyard.
With a Casio keyboard.
That's awesome.
Okay, what is your favorite Canadian horror movie?
Well, you know, I did just watch that movie called Pontypool, which is a Canadian horror movie.
Yeah, tell me about it.
It was rich with so many new ideas, which you know I love.
New ideas about what, Saya? Please, expound.
Well, it was a fresh take on the zombie genre.
Wow. Which, is that possible?
Yes.
Okay.
This movie was so trippy, and it started out so realistic and kind of boring. I was like, what is this going to be? Is this really a horror movie? The entire movie takes place in a radio station, and it's just these three people who are, one's like the you know, radio personality, and the other two are like his producers. And they start hearing... They're doing the morning news, and they start hearing that some event is happening outside. And it's really effective because the tension builds so slowly that you don't realize that you're kind of freaked out until they're, like, on the phone with their guy in the helicopter who is witnessing all this stuff that's happening, and then he starts getting attacked by people. And you're super confused for, like, the first a good 40 minutes of the movie.
Wow.
You don't know what's going on. And then... It's gonna sound weird, but the way that people are turning into zombies is via the English language, and they are hearing words and forgetting what the words mean and repeating the words until they fall into a rage and start killing each other. And that is the point of the movie. And it's so effectively done. It's such a smart screenplay. I was just like totally taken with it. And it does have some gore in it by the end, because I was kind of like, all right, I signed up for a zombie movie. Where's the blood? You know? Where's the gore? And it has this really horrific scene of this one of the characters running into the sound booth, the glass sound booth, like, until she dies.
Wow.
Like, she just runs into it over and over again, like, screaming.
And
falls down and dies.
It's echoing a little too close to me to The Happening, which quite possibly is just the biggest, steamingest pile of shit ever.
Let's not even talk about M. Night. I'm totally into The Walking Dead, though, right now. Mm-hmm. I'm totally hooked in that show. It got me. I know people hate it. I'm into it.
It's okay.
It's great.
I've only seen the
first
zombie
episode. Scenes are amazing. The most recent one in the last episode was a zombie pushing its head through a broken car window until its skin separated from its skull, and it was pushing its skull, chomping its teeth through the car while its head, its skin was on the outside of the window and its skull was on the inside. It was fucking cool.
I guess the great thing about being able to do a zombie show is that you can continually go with, like, yes. How far can we push these fucking zombies?
And there was a great episode where a zombie was in a well for a really long time, and then they tried to pull it out, and it burst in half. And it exploded. It was sick. And I, like, screamed with joy when that happened. It was so entertaining. Okay, well, let's go to your question of movies that you really only had to see once, and even that maybe was...
Well, I did... Okay. The question is... Movies where that you have seen where once was enough.
Yeah.
And you could take that into your interpretation as it was just banal and mediocre.
Yeah.
Or in some other cases, like Requiem for a Dream.
Right.
Like that sort of way as well.
Or even movies that are so boring, but so important cinematically that you have to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Like Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah.
I really like Lawrence of Arabia, but I don't want to ever watch it again.
Sure.
It's so long, you know? I would say Dancer in the Dark.
Any of his movies. I've never gone over to Von Trier because I don't think I can handle such blatant...
Misery?
Misery on women over and over again.
I know, it is always on women, isn't it?
Over and over again, and it's always these women that are very open and giving.
Mm.
And they're willing to do whatever it is to... help someone else, or they just need some simple protection, and then they are just immediately taken advantage of in the most horrible and excruciating ways. And I don't know if I can do that. It's like almost reading, like...
It's like emotional torture.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, you know, sometimes I enjoy watching things that are like finding the almost mundane faults, but there's a difference between that and like what Von Trier does, which is finding... extreme vulnerability and then just digging in there and exploiting it so hard, which, you know, I have to say Dancer in the Dark was an incredible movie. It totally moved me. I cried and it was beautiful, but it was like, as I was crying, I was saying, come on, really? And, you know, I love Bjork. I love her music. And it was just this like perfect storm of like beautiful music, horrible things happening to a good person. Oh, you know,
right.
It just totally got me. So it's, I think it's a good movie, but it's not one I really never need to see again. I would also put Naked Lunch in that list of, I love David Cronenberg.
Mm-hmm.
Never need to see that again. Anyway, what are your movies that, other movies that you don't want to watch again?
I think Fish Tank is in there.
Yeah.
I was watching that movie and I had so many different emotions go through me where you think that Fassbender might be an okay kind of guy. And
well, you just want him to be, don't
you?
You
really do. Because, I mean, he's real sexy.
Yeah.
And he seems really
nurturing,
nurturing and supportive of these girls that are not his. And then it just crosses that line. And you realize how much of a creep he is. From what he actually, what he says to this girl as he's having sex with her. And you're just like, oh, you're really a scumbag.
Yeah.
And then it takes that turn of her going and finding his family and kind of kidnapping the child. And you're just really.
That's a great, great movie. I would watch it again, I think, because it didn't. It wasn't hard for me to watch. I enjoyed the process of watching it more than I was like. Felt like I was being put through some kind of gauntlet.
It had
you know?
It had a bit of an uplift at the end. She went on to do something else with her life, and I feel like that's kind of something that helps you get you through those types of movies, is if there's an uplift at the end.
Her character was just so compelling, and I'd kind of want to, like, hang out with her for a little while, just to talk to her. She's so just hard.
Mm-hmm.
I love characters like that who are just impenetrable, like steel, yeah. You know? So, Natalie.
Yes.
Imagine this tableau. You're in a gymnasium. You have no weapons. It's just you. Maybe you're wearing some sturdy shoes. How many unarmed 5-year-olds could you fight off? If a horde of unarmed zombie 5-year-olds were let into...
They're zombies too?
Well, let's just say they have the rage virus.
Oh, God. So they have kind of like more strength than a normal 5-year-old would have?
Okay, let's say that they just got the rage virus, so they haven't, you know, they're just on the, yeah.
Okay.
How many do you think you could take down?
Well, I think the first thing I would do is probably, five. So that's not that tall. I would definitely have to just bust one in the face with my foot
and
kick in the
face. It'd be like Gage. Like Gage from...
Oh, really? Gage from... Okay, so...
Was he like 3 or 4,
He was little. Yeah, he might have been 3.
Okay, so this is, I don't know.
I feel like I would have to do that.
45 to 60 pounds.
Okay,
each.
That's good to know. That's good to know, because here's my second step. After beating the shit out of one, at least, hopefully there's like a front runner that I can kick to the ground, I would pick him up and then do like a whirly gig, like a whirling dervish.
Yeah, that's good.
And just crack as many skulls as I could as I was whirling around. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know. How many do you think I could get out by that? I'd have to refurbish my 5-year-old, because obviously I couldn't use that same first one as a bludgeoning tool, because that, I'm sure that skull is still malleable, and after cracking some of the other skulls, it would be.
Yeah, I didn't think I'd get such a detailed reaction from you. That's great. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that would be hard. Would you have a pyramid of 5-year-old bodies when
you're
done?
Well, I would say that, like, I would say no, it would not be a pyramid, because I would ultimately be trying to move my way out of this gymnasium, so I think it would just be like a scatter buckshot.
What if you grab 2 of them and just use them like as battering rams to get out through the other ones?
I don't think that would work as well, because...
Or one?
Because their height
this?
Is not at my shoulders. Yeah. It's like closer to like my hips, and I feel like the whirly gig beating them with another one might work.
I have a surprise for you. We're going to a gymnasium. I have several school buses full of rage virus
just
infected. Let's try it. Let's close it out with quick. If you had to bring one DVD with you to your deserted island, what would it be?
Really?
Yeah. Let's close it out. I got mine.
All right. Well, how about I ask you that question? Because I don't have an answer for that.
Seasons 1 through 3 of Strangers with Candy. Bam.
Really?
Yeah, sure. That would entertain me for my whole life. Any ideas? Jumpin' Jack Flash?
You know, I wouldn't pick Jumpin' Jack Flash. I would probably pick something like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah.
It's got everything you need.
Although I can't really sit through that stupid raindrops keep falling on my head montage.
Oh, you know what? That might be the clincher that kills it.
Bad part.
I feel like it has a lot of attractive people. So, you know, wank material. And
okay. We went there. I would not have comedy, that on the Strangers with Candy DVD.
You would not. There's a love story. There's action. There's comedy. There's
pretty dry, though. I don't know if you'd want a sandy... It's sort of a sandy movie, if you're stuck in a sandy
They jump
place.
In a river at one point.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
They get pretty wet there. But, yeah, it is pretty dusty.
Maybe Whale Rider would be better.
Oh, will you just stop?
Why aren't any whales coming to rescue me? Is it because I'm not Maori?
Yes, that's exactly why.
Damn. All right, well... Hopefully you've learned a little more about us and our strange, strange personalities.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And thanks for listening. Goodbye. I felt something. I'm going home.